If a startup is looking for a strategic partner regarding market access to see how to go to the customers, how do we reach a large footprint, the network, if they are looking for support to test their technology somewhere in the process, or if they are looking for support to still develop their solution, that's where we are best positioned.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.
Welcome to VC for Circularity, the venture capital perspective on circular economy startups. In the last episode, we listened to Mark Windeknecht, principal at World Fund. Mark discussed the connection between decarbonization and the circular economy. Today's episode will be about corporate venture capital strategy and circularity in the construction industry. But before we start, I have an offer for you. If you want to get the actionable one-pager about this conversation, sign up for the Circularity FM newsletter. You can find it at www.circularity.fm. He studied economics and finance at University of Zurich and started his career at PwC as manager corporate finance. This year, 2025, marks his 20th anniversary at Holcim Macquarie, where he worked as assistant to the group CFO, manager corporate strategy and risk management, and head of performance navigation. For more than 6 years, he is head of digital partnerships and startup partner at Holcim Macquarie Ventures. Welcome, Bengt.
Thank you for having me.
Bengt, let's start with a personal question. What was your career plan when you joined Holcim almost 20 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, I had experience at that point in time in corporate finance, in doing M&A, corporate finance transactions, both on a consulting and banking side. But I was very curious to see a little bit, how is this really happening in a corporate environment, right? And I thought an industrial environment is really hands-on. This is really still brick and mortar. And you cannot go more brick and mortar than going into a construction business, right? So this is where I thought, okay, let's join Holcim and see a little bit how we work there.
It seems that you liked it.
Absolutely. I mean, maybe my last name, Steinbrecher, which is in English translated Stonebreaker, is kind of leading already that I must work in this industry, right?
Yeah, sounds like that. 20 years ago, circularity was not as popular as it is right now. Let's look at circularity from today's point of view. So for Holcim Macquarie, what are the main circularity levers you see in the industry?
Well, I think in the end, circularity is a huge topic for construction industry, right? Construction, demolition, material flows make up something like 40% of global waste streams, and a lot is still going into landfill. But at the same time, I mean, the materials would be ideally to use, reuse, and recycle. The main levers are that we are kind of replacing virgin materials in our production process, that we directly integrate that when we are producing cement, but also then concrete, and we reduce virgin materials, so we reduce our embodied carbon footprint. And the other waste stream that we are using is to replace thermal energy, when we can use waste streams at their end of life to use as a thermal source.
Okay. That makes sense. And since now we're speaking from the perspective of the corporate venture entity, how does this translate into your venture strategy?
Yeah, so we are currently at 10 million construction demolition materials that we are reusing already in 2024. And we have an ambition to double that by 2030 to 20 million tons of construction demolition materials being reused. What does that mean for our Holcim Maker venture strategy is, I mean, first point is we need to secure the sourcing of this material. So kind of any sourcing innovation is one first lever. Second lever would be around processing and screening. I think this is standard across many recycling activities, right? Doesn't matter what type of materials. And the third one is then to look into novel products, innovations on the product side. How can you upcycle waste streams into new construction products? I would say these are the three main levers we are looking at from that. venture perspective.
And you said before, there's also the energy dimension on the group level. Is this also covered in your investment strategy somehow?
This is also covered. This is something which I would say is already more established. You mentioned before that 20 years ago, circularity was not yet so much a topic. I mean, replacing traditional fuels with alternative fuel types, that was already 20 years ago a big thing in the cement industry. There, I would say, big topic is now the switch from using general waste streams to biomass. Super interesting. I mean, there is so much biomass out there, and we can replace up to almost theoretically 100% of our energy needs with biomass. And this is for sure also an interesting topic.
Okay. And let's do maybe even more one step back and talking about your investment strategy. So you already described a bit the circular aspect, then there's the energy aspect. Does this cover your investment strategy, or do you have other fields where you look into?
In general, we have split into three verticals that we're looking at. The first vertical is around sustainability. And this is obviously including the circularity aspect. It's a lot about decarbonization of our activities. The second vertical is around productivity and efficiency. And this can be in our operations to become more efficient on our production processes, but it can be also on the customer side. Productivity is a huge issue for the construction industry. If we can help as a supplier to our contractor customers to become more efficient, that's a lever where we would like to contribute. And the third vertical is completely around novel construction technology. So this can be from robotics to 3D printing to modular construction, where also circularity could have a component again, if we think about modular building, deconstruction, and so on.
Do these three pillars also reflect the balance in your portfolio? So are they roughly equal, or do you have a focus point?
Very good question. No, I think we have currently a strong focus point on the sustainability side, on the first pillar, where it's a lot about process innovation and novel materials. I mean, I would say this is historically a little bit also where we have the most expertise, where we feel the most comfortable, which is also in some ways potentially easier to implement because it's directly in our operations in some cases. But we aim to balance the portfolio out more. So there's also a lot of push internally to see how could we do other things. Maybe just to add on this, I mean, we are a strategic investor, right, as a CVC. And I would say when doing investment decisions, 2/3 is strategic priorities. What can we do as a strategic partner with the startup? And 1/3 is the financial side. Is that a super exciting story and our return on invested capital?
You mentioned just strategic criteria and you mentioned the financial criteria. So every startup you invest in has to meet certain growth and profitability expectations. The criteria you apply when looking at growth and profitability, are they somehow similar or significantly different from the traditional venture capital investors without a strategic background?
No, I think that's where we aim to behave and to assess as a financial VC. I mean, that's where we are building to have such expertise in-house, to look at it also in the same way, to model the same way. The difference is then that for us, it's maybe 1/3 of the weight, and we can balance it a little bit with other dimensions.
Okay. And let's look at the other 2/3, the strategic requirements. So can you tell us a bit more, what are the criteria you apply when selecting investments, and then also, of course, later on determine the success of your activities?
Yeah, so I mean, there it's really about that as a strategic partner, we can also add value to the startup, and also that somehow we as a partner, we benefit out of the collaboration. So the key aspect that we look at there is how is a technology, a solution being adopted in our organization? So if this is something which is focusing more in-house, a technology, have we been able to test it and validate it in our plants? Has the first pilot plant started to adopt the technology, and at the later stage, how are we progressing in a rollout of this technology? And then to what extent is this helping us to drive productivity, efficiency, cost? or if it's something which is more market focused to our customer, to what extent have we been able to bring such solutions to our customers, position it there, increase revenues by positioning these products and so on. So it's very much about adoption and scaling, which means that at the point of an investment decision, we would like to have somehow this roadmap, how we get there. And the first key point in assessing this roadmap is, have we already tested the solution in our business and do we have already a proof point internally? If this is not the case, the risk for us is just increasing significantly about the success of such a strategic partnership, right? Mm-hmm. So this is kind of like our technical due diligence is tested in-house. And the second component to that would be then that we have internally a business owner who is kind of like a project manager taking such a solution on board and being responsible to execute on this expansion and rollout roadmap. These are the two things. If we have those things secured, we can demonstrate in our portfolio already with a limited track record that these are game changers to make such a partnership successful and to make this successful.
And I know that you also, next to the venture activities, you do have a venture clienting activities. So to me, it sounds like a bit that the venture clienting would be, let's say, the prior step, and startups that demonstrate value there, that they qualify also then more for the venture stream. Is this sequence?
This is the ideal scenario, that somehow this the venture clienting, the testing of solutions, early exploration, that this is like a feeder channel to this pipeline. And we have such example cases where this worked super well. Obviously, it's not always that easy to have it, to have this patience also, both on our side and on the startup side, to go through this cycle. I mean, if a startup is in a funding round now and you don't want to miss out, you have not tested it, sometimes it's difficult to do this pilot in advance. But this is the ambition, yes.
Okay, cool. And now let's turn it around and look at it from the startup perspective. So why should startups choose you as an investor?
I think that they should come to us if they would like to have a strategic partner. If they are just looking for money, then we are definitely not the best one. There are others who have more money who can also help them more on, I don't know, governance side, the strategic direction, whatever. But if a startup is looking for a strategic partner, either regarding market access to see, hey, how do we go to the customers? How do we reach a large footprint, the network? If they are looking for support to test their technology somewhere in the process, or if they are looking for support to still develop their solution, that's where we are best positioned. I mean, we have, I would say, leading R&D activities. We have an innovation center in Lyon with experts in many fields around product and process innovation. We have our global footprint. If they would like to test the solution somewhere in the UK or in Austria or in Latin America, in North America, then we are serving thousands of customers every day. So also this market access.
A common concern from the startup side when you bring in a strategic VC is that you're kind of locked in, because I mean, most startups who start the venture capital path know this will ultimately lead to some kind of exit, at least in the traditional model. And if you bring a strategic VC on board, it feels like that it limits your possible exit targets, because Holcim then has a seat on the table. For what kind of startups does it make sense? And what, maybe it also is not so interesting, because then competitors or other exit partners might not be attracted anymore.
Yeah, I mean, maybe first thing to say there is that we really aim to be a good professional venture capital investor, in the sense that we are not coming with corporate clauses and limitations and restrictions which would limit the startup growth, right? So I mean, typically, we aim to get minority stakes somewhere, let's say, between 5 and 10%. We are interested, obviously, in somehow helping to shape and grow the company. So if there is an opportunity for advisory board seats or a board seat, this is something that we are interested in. But the other side, I mean, we are not requesting exclusivities, which would limit the startups. We are not especially not requesting right of first refusals if the startup would like to do an exit, right? That there is always holds and saying, oh, look, we get now the first priority exit. I mean, in this sense, all our deals are really at good VC market terms. And then on the other side, in each investment decision, we need to defend why do we want to invest in such a startup and why are we not just becoming a customer, right? I mean, all that we discussed so far, we could potentially also achieve by just having a strong customer relationship and do such a commercial partnership. And I think, I mean, this is where we say, hey, we are investing in cases where we think that this can become strategically relevant for us, where we believe we can really make a big difference with our network, with our footprint, and where we also would like to somehow benefit from helping the startup to grow financially through the investment. And potentially still that we say, hey, look, we get some first mover advantage, let's call it like that, which is then potentially reflected in some commercial terms with the startup.
Okay. Let's look again deeper on your, let's say, evaluation framework with the lens of circularity. Do you have any specific framework you apply when it comes to assessing the degree of circularity, or how does this look like?
We would follow there the KPIs that the group is using to measure and to set our ambitions for the group. And we have a very comprehensive, I would say, reporting on these numbers for external purposes. But equally important is that the targets and the management is really incentivized or driven by certain numbers. And we've already talked about kind of this replacement of raw materials, right, where we have this ambition now of 20 million tons. And this is kind of one thing where we say, okay, how can we support this ambition? The other one is what is called the thermal substitution rate, the TSR, which is really how much of your traditional fuel you're replacing with different energy sources. And then ultimately, if we look at our product, it's about the carbon footprint, right? If we are either using already decarbonated materials as a raw material, this is reducing the CO2 footprint of the cement and the concrete. Or we are also working with startups and technology to store CO2 in construction materials. So these would, I would say, are the three key KPIs that we would be looking at from such a circularity framework. And then obviously, I think each circularity use case needs to have either somewhere a top line or a bottom line, so revenue or cost impact, which is obviously then also always important. How do we now financially benefit from that?
Mm-hmm. Can you give us an example from one of your portfolio companies, how this looks like and how this one specific portfolio company contributes to one or a multiple of the indicators you mentioned?
I mean, there are not that many circularity startups currently yet in our portfolio. We have especially two which really fit very well in this category. One is Neustark, which is a Swiss ETH spin-off, which provides a technology to store CO2 in demolished concrete. So really you take the CDM and they have a process then to carbonate demolished concrete, which we can use again then into fresh concrete as a recycled product. This was really one of those cases which worked according to a school book with a venture client piloting this by our Swiss entity, proving that the process was working, demonstrating that there is a market demand. Customers are keen to use such a recycled material, which is storing CO2 in their building. I mean, that's a really not just a cool story. It's really generating at least some impact. And from then on, we have then decided that we would like to grow this offering across our footprint in Europe. We have invested at that point in time and now are already in the process of making installations in France, first customer projects in the UK. There are installations in Germany, Austria. So that's a quite exciting story on this side. How we are measuring now the impact there is kind of a little bit the business model. We as a construction business, we provide concrete as a carbon sink, and we are kind of a CO2 storage provider, which where we get kind of being paid from the startup. And on the other side, we have a product which is differentiated in the market and can be marketed as such. So we have there kind of cost reduction and somehow potentially a differentiation pricing opportunity.
You just said you're paid by the startup for being a carbon sink. If I get that right, can you elaborate more on that one?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Neustark in this case, with their technology, they are permanently storing CO2. Mm-hmm. And because this is a certified process, they have certified that with gold standard, kind of one of those agencies looking at these carbon storage processes. And this allows them to issue carbon removal certificates, these mm-hmm. CDRs. And Neustark, the startup, then is selling those certificates in the market to companies which would like to offset their carbon footprint, like the banks of this world, the tech companies of this world, and so on. And this is part of their business model. We are kind of being then paid by enabling that, by storing it, but we are out of the CDR business.
Okay, nice. That's a not so obvious revenue stream then.
For us or for them?
Yeah, I mean, for you or for the, let's say, the construction, the building planner. So depending, of course, where the revenue hits in. So if you then produce such a building, then I guess you can, from a customer point of view, you can source this alternative material at a lower price or, let's say, at a competitive price. That makes it also interesting.
Yeah, exactly. I think These CDRs, I mean, they can be a great business model for startups. I think for the industry, they are a good enabler to accelerate novel technologies and to make this economically viable. I mean, this is extra effort. This is still typically at smaller scale. So you need somehow a process which is fueling this to happen. And I think this is a super neat process to really bring new technology, decarbonized solutions to the market and making it economically viable.
Definitely. And let's go again one step back and look at your, let's say, venture investment strategy. There are multiple business models out there. So one is about advanced materials. Another one is more about collection, identification, sorting. There are digital platforms out there. Do you have any business model preferences when it comes to circularity, or is it like a case-by-case assessment anyway?
It's for sure always case by case, but as a general rule of thumb, I would say it helps us if it's easy to connect to our business, to what mm-hmm. we discussed before a little bit. We would like to see how we can benefit and add value to such a partnership. So the closer it is to our existing flows already, the easier. So things like sourcing can work quite well. We can immediately test it. We looked at solutions, for example, where startups came up with completely novel products like insulation materials out of construction demolition waste, which are super interesting, where we also would be somewhat interested, but we also realized it's maybe not that easy for us in our traditional sales channels to help now to sell these materials, right? And then it's mm-hmm. the question, okay, how much value add can we generate? I think what is also interesting is, you mentioned platforms, you see novel business models evolving around the waste market. And I think this is something which is interesting for us to see, how can this become relevant? Are there all of a sudden intermediaries connecting us as a receiver of such materials to demolition sites and so on? And how can we use such novel business models as partners or potentially also to venture in ourselves?
Okay. And how do you handle more asset-heavy startups that require building additional plants, facilities? I'm not so familiar with Neustark, but I mean, there's also an industrial process behind that. And traditionally, as a VC, you don't want to invest too much into the assets, more into the business opportunity. Is it something that you look at and shy away, or is there also a combination with debt instruments you use?
I would say we are, as an industry, we are very much used to asset heavy, right? I mean, we are by definition asset heavy. So probably we have a little bit less fear than the VC from these things. Asset heavy can sometimes also mean that it's a little bit more difficult to scale up. That's one thing where the VCs are potentially concerned, and we are also looking into this. How easy can these things scale? I would say there is the smaller asset heavy things like Neustark, where you need to have such carbonation installations on your recycling center, for example, and this would be then paid or bought by the recycling center. So Neustark sells the machines or the equipment. This is still relatively easy to scale up for then such customers. If it's the more heavy ones, then probably we are looking into offtake agreements. That's something that mm-hmm. some of our startups where we said, hey, look, if you need to invest now 100 million or so into a plant, we give you the certainty that we take off the material, which helps then, as you say, to look also into alternative project financing. Okay. I think this is something that we made so far a good experience with, and I think where the industry also still needs to develop more to take this scale up really into industrial scales.
Yeah. All right. And you referred to the traditional VCs already. Let's look into them again. When observing independent VCs, do you see that they have some kind of preferences when it comes to business models or technologies in the circularity field?
In general, I would say, and I mean, that's a bit broader across construction tech. I think construction mm-hmm. tech circularity is maybe still a bit more niche, right? There are, in other areas, there are many generalist funds investing into B2C platforms all over the place. I think that's not the case for our sector. And I would say circularity is potentially even more niche than construction tech is. Why is that? It's probably because the market is very fragmented and decentralized. So there is probably still uncertainty of financial investors to see if these things really can scale and do these really become unicorns. And I think that's why there are still the amounts, the funds in that space are less. It is this leads then that the financial VC would be in the circularity space more biased to technology topics where there is also IP behind, where they could say, okay, I mean, I can see how this is somewhat protected and as a technology can potentially scale. And I think for us, you're also always obviously looking at the scaling factor, but it could also be limited to regions, right? If we think about something could scale for us in Germany, Austria, Switzerland, that's already can be a scaling factor for us. This will not make it a unicorn, but it will create enough impact for us.
Yeah. And one follow-up question on that one when it comes to circularity. So I've talked to a couple of VCs that have a dedicated circular focus and they also have a circularity framework and assessment scheme. Is this rather common also in, let's say, in the construction field or in the software field where you probably also have contact with VCs that people have, let's say, an industry-specific framework which they use to assess the attractiveness and potential of a startup? Or is it, let's say, circularity or environmental impact VCs a bit special because they add this extra layer of impact or circular ambition?
Yeah, I probably have not sufficient kind of benchmark data for it, but my gut feeling would be to say, yes, as you already mentioned, that there are impact investors kind of almost claiming that this is a special class of investing, right? So, I mean, they have these additional dimensions of criteria that they look at to see if something fits their criteria and what would need to be fulfilled. So probably you have that from this impact investor category very specially. And then I think if you look at strategics, the strategic always also has this impact view, but just more looking at that your own impact. And how does it fit into your sustainability and circularity targets, which are similar across probably our peers, but which can be still with different focus elements?
Yeah, I had the same thought when listening to you. It also feels like you have kind of strategic KPI. You mentioned the three dimensions that are relevant for Holcim. Yeah, and impact VC or circular VC also applies a set of KPIs and frameworks. Yeah. So in that way, it might be closer to a corporate VC, at least when it comes to selection. I mean, there are other major differences, of course, but when assessing the circularity fit or strategic fit, it's maybe a similar process.
Yeah. And then I think it probably depends on how close a CVC is to the group in general. Mm-hmm. And you have those which are more independent. They would maybe more use more generic additional set of impact KPIs. Whereas if you're rather closer to the group, which we would be definitely, then you let yourself guide very much by kind of the strategic targets that the group has. Because I mean, I'll be asked every half year, every year, kind of, okay, how is now your portfolio and your investment activities or your current proposal contributing to my targets for next year? for 2030, hopefully.
All right, Bengt, let's wrap it up. I have three final questions for you. The first one is coming back to the founder perspective. So what's your advice to circular founders applying for funding?
I think my first advice would be linking to what we discussed before a little bit about how decentralized and fragmented the market is. I would recommend bringing kind of the ecosystem and the stakeholders early on in the discussion. Typically, this is not another market where just by the technology, a product or so, a solution, it will be a success on its own. You will need to have your partners on board, and these can be commercial partners or financial strategic partners. But I think make sure that you think about who are the partners you need to have on board.
Okay. The next one is about the future. What kind of trends do you see in circular business in the next 3 years?
I don't expect here a landslide, right? I mean, what we have seen is that typically it's slow moving. But I think what we also see is that there is some acceleration primarily driven on a regulation driven. I mean, these waste streams are being monitored more closely. Landfilling is becoming more challenging. The tipping fees are going up. There is an increased regulatory requirement on transparency. What is coming on a job site? What is leaving the job site? Where is it going? And so on. And we see quite a lot of exciting startups coming up to address these novel needs. And I think that's super, super promising. This is where you potentially can see quite quick uptake. So this is more on this regulation side. And then I think from the market side, the whole dynamics about energy efficiency in construction or in the build environment with renovation and so on, we see a lot activity happening there, obviously, and this can be an opportunity for novel products and potentially also for more modular construction. We mentioned before quickly that you already think about assembling and disassembling buildings, right? I think this can be a trend which will help these startups, maybe moving a little bit slower than the regulatory framework, but still fundamentals.
My last question, Bengt, is about people. So many people have been listening to our conversation. Who should reach out to you?
Well, I think, I mean, first of all, everybody who would like to kind of continue such a conversation and deep dive more. In general, then obviously startups and founders who are having a solution or an idea which they would like to brainstorm, deep dive, or where we can help them to organize an exchange with an expert on the technical side, an expert on the market side, or where they're also just in the funding process and they would like to hear our thoughts if that could fit to Holcim. So always open and happy there to have such exchange. We talked before about ecosystem play. I think it's super important that we are working together, collaborating to bring this forward. And this is where I see our role as well.
Fantastic. Thanks a lot for sharing your experience.
Thanks a lot for having me.
This was Bengt Steinbrecher, Head of Digital Partnerships and Startup Partner at Holcim Maker Ventures. This episode is part of our series VC for Circularity. If you want to get the actionable one-pager about this conversation, sign up for the Circularity FM newsletter. You can find it at www.circularity.fm. Let's drive a profitable circular economy. And please don't forget, the most abundant renewable resource is your imagination.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.